Prayer by Michael Lunig. God, give us rain when we expect sun. Give us music when we expect trouble. Give us tears when we expect breakfast. Give us dreams when we expect a storm. Give us a stray dog when we expect congratulations. God, play with us, turn us sideways and around. And so ends the prayer, but really, pray for our expectations to be turned on their heads. Give us tears when we expect to be fed. Give us wild obligations when we expect congratulations. Turn us sideways. You want us to pray for this? Hope for this? That's a bit nuts. And a bit you. We all know the comment mantra. You get what you expect. That most certainly is part of what it means to be a people of expectation from a new perspective. We give that human beings have tremendous power to shape and create their own experience. If you expect people to be good, you will discover and notice goodness. If you believe life is on your side, you will see opportunities unfold over and over again. This form of relating to expectation is about reminding ourselves that we have control. It is about noticing we have options. It's about taking hold of the situation and putting our stamp on it. And yet there are also moments when letting the situation take hold of us is good for the soul. Sometimes holding too tightly to our desired expectations leaves us blind. Sometimes getting what we expect leads us to expect that we will always get what we want. Sometimes the most important question is not, are you ready to take control of the reality in front of you? But instead, are you willing to let go of expectation and be led by the unknown?
At the Halifax Church, we center our church experience around a different theme each month. And today we start a new month and a new theme. Our theme for December is expectation. It's an appropriate theme for December as we approach the longest night of the year. We're sustained by the expectation that after December 21st, the days will begin to lengthen. And spring will inevitably follow eventually. The Unitarian Universalist Church is perhaps the only institution dedicated to helping people figure out for themselves what it means to lead a good life. And you can't lead a good life if you don't expect good things in your life. To illustrate that point, I want to pick up an idea from a service that I did 2 weeks ago about restorative justice. If you saw the sermon, you'll undoubtedly remember or recall the video clip of the Canadian woman, Katie Hutchison, whose husband had been brutally murdered. In the video, Katie said that she had wanted justice, but not vengeance. When she finally met the young man who had murdered her husband, she felt compassion for him. She helped with his rehabilitation, and when he was released, they traveled the world together, promoting the concept of restorative justice. Well, after the service, a member of this congregation approached me with a comment. And I love your comments because they help me look at things from a perspective different than my own. So this person noted that the murderer was identified 5 years after the crime. And the suggestion was that there was need for time to elapse before the victim of such a crime would be able to act in a compassionate way. Viktor Frankl, author of Man's Search for Meaning, wrote, "Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and our freedom." End of quote. We don't always have the luxury of time between stimulus and response. When we do, it's undoubtedly helpful to nurture our growth and our freedom. The This is why anger is such a destructive emotion. Unless we cultivate other responses, anger can fill the space between the stimulus and the response and shape our response in a very negative way. How do we cultivate other responses? We do so counterintuitively by imagining the worst of all possible events in our lives and preparing mentally for how we would respond if such a thing was to happen. This is a discipline taught by the ancient Greek Stoic philosophers. There is nothing new under the sun. I spoke 2 weeks ago about how the ideas of restorative justice relate to life in a covenanted religious community, like a UU congregation. The ideas behind restorative justice and covenant are the same. Both speak to the importance of maintaining relationships through difficult times. When an offense occurs, we ask, what happened? Who was affected and in what ways? And what can be done to correct the injustice and heal the relationship? The time to prepare for your response to a perceived injustice is not after the injustice happens. You must be cultivating a new way of thinking and acting before that triggering event. I'm sure that you know this already, but it's one thing to think it intellectually, and it's another to live it. My hope is that we will continue to think about how we want to respond to injustice on a personal or a personal insult before we are confronted with it. Okay, moving on from there to expectations. Let's consider how our expectations affect our reality. Expectations are usually a projection of our past experience. As adults, we have the ability to influence our experience, but as children, our experience is controlled for us. This, unfortunately, is the basis for much of the tragedy that happens in the world. It's also the basis for so much good that happens in the world, too. Children that are raised in loving and nurturing homes expect life to be welcoming and sustaining and nurturing. But a child whose experience in the first 5 years of life or so teaches them that they are unworthy of love, or that they cannot trust other people, or that violence is an acceptable response to a problem, those children will grow into adults with those same expectations. We know this. The science is unequivocal. And yet, as a society, too often we wait until the child is an adult to try to correct the problems. As adults, we may carry this baggage, or not, but still, as adults, our expectations shape our reality in many ways. First, if we expect certain outcomes, if we have an expectation of certain outcomes, we will notice when those things happen, and we'll discount situations where they don't happen. I have an innocuous example of this that I've used before. Does anyone here drive a Volvo? I don't want to offend anybody. Well, a few years ago, I was cut off in traffic by a very bad driver who happened to be driving a Volvo. And for some reason, I started to watch. I started to watch out for Volvo drivers. It was kind of a game I was playing. I knew it. But I found that there are a tremendous number of bad Volvo drivers. And that's kind of surprising because Volvos are known for their safety features, for people's concern for safety. Pretty soon when I saw a Volvo coming, I would tense up, anticipating this guy was going to be a problem. I was aware that I was creating this reality by ignoring the bad habits of those driving other makes of cars and focusing on those driving Volvos and discounting the good driving habits of those Volvo drivers who didn't threaten me. But I was still surprised how my reality confirmed my expectations. And to this day, I'm a little bit cautious around Volvo drivers.
Norm, you should know that someone in the Fredericton congregation put up their hand.
I didn't see that. My apologies.
Well, it is an innocuous example, but racism and all the other forms of destructive prejudice also feed off the same feedback loop. It starts with an expectation that gets reinforced by what we choose to observe and what we choose to ignore. Second thing about negative expectations is that they will limit your experience of reality. If I expect that people will react negatively to an invitation, I may choose not to invite them. I mean, why would I risk rejection? Why would I waste my time inviting somebody who I didn't really think was going to accept the invitation? This phenomenon, I think, is also related to our fear of success. You may fail to take an action because you don't think there's much likelihood of a positive outcome. But you might also fail to take an action because you really don't want the complications that you expect will come along with success. Either way, your reality becomes limited because you choose to limit your options. If you never open the door, you never know for sure what's behind it. And your reality is thereby diminished. The title for this sermon is Bending Reality. I'm attracted to this title by the famous quotation from the Universalist minister, Theodore Parker. You may have heard this version of this quote attributed to Martin Luther King. And in fact, it's actually embroidered on the carpet in the Oval Office. But Martin Luther King borrowed the quote from Theodore Parker, and he shortened it up a little bit. Theodore Parker's quote reads, "I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a very long one. My eye reaches only but a little ways. I cannot calculate the curve and complete the figure by the experience of my sight. But I can divine it by conscience. And from what I see, I'm sure that it bends towards justice." If the arc of the moral universe bends toward justice, what's the cause that bends it? Some would say it's God's will. And others would say that the universe isn't just or unjust or unjust, it's just neutral. And if the arc of the universe is to be bent, it will only be bent as a result of the good expectations of humankind. Whatever the cause, I choose to believe Theodore Parker's assertion that in the long run, the arc of the universe bends towards justice, and that belief shapes my expectations of reality. Modern physics has provided us with a new understanding of the role of expectations in this amazing universe. I'm not a physicist, but I'm fascinated that at the most fundamental level of the smallest particles that be observed, what we observe depends on what we expect to find. And this is metaphorical. This is the result of experiments. The classic experiment is in this mode is the double slit experiment, where we set our apparatus to prove that light is a wave. And then our measurements will confirm that a single photon of light passes through these two slits simultaneously as would a wave. If you set your apparatus up one way, you can prove that light is a wave. If we set our apparatus up to confirm that light is a particle, then our measurements will confirm that that single photon of light passes through only one slit, as would a particle. This has tremendous implications in trying to understand our reality. I'm not trying to make a case here that our macro experience of the universe is as unpredictable as the universe at the quantum level, but I am saying that our expectations of the universe need to leave room for the unexpected. As I get towards the end of my remarks this morning, I want to broach the ultimate question of expectation. Do you expect that your life has meaning? I come back to the writing of Viktor Frankl. He postulated that humankind was driven by a need for meaning. His experience as a Jew in the extermination camps of the Holocaust led him to conclude, and I quote, "Life is never made unbearable by circumstances, but only by a lack of meaning and purpose." And so I ask, do you expect that your life will have meaning? The answer to this question will have the most profound consequences on how you experience reality. And so ends the sermon.